This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscawain. Used to be, looking for a job meant pulling out the resume, polishing it up, and drafting an attention-getting cover letter. That's still part of the deal, but the advent of social media has changed and expanded the game in a big way. Job hunters now have tools like LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, which can bring them to the attention of many more potential employers. So, what is the best way to use those sites and build a personal brand online? Our guests today join us to offer some insight. Hannah Morgan is a job search, career, and social media strategist and founder of CareerSherpa.net. Welcome, Hannah.
Thanks so much, Mary. Glad to be here.
And Kevin Grubb is Associate Director of Digital Media and Assessment at Villanova University's Career Center and author of The Career Counselor's Guide to Social Media in the Job Search. Kevin, great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Mary. Glad to be here.
So when many of us think of social media, it's a place to catch up with friends, share some pictures, maybe a funny video, but it can be an extremely effective tool if you're looking for work. We'll get into the how-tos in just a moment. But Kevin, let's start with you. How critical is it that a person seeking employment in this day and age use social media or learns to use social media?
It's really critical, especially because what social media does is lowers the barrier to getting important knowledge about your job search and the types of people and companies that you would want to interact with. The internet, of course, has done this, but social media has taken it a level further in terms of contacting the specific people that could be a resource to you. So it opens up opportunities for you to connect with folks that you might not have otherwise known existed or were so close to potentially your network. And the other piece of it is that employers are using social media sites to find candidates for jobs. They're looking for people who may have the skills match that they're looking for, the abilities match, experience match that aligns with the positions they need to fill. So by having a profile, you have the opportunity to not only be found, but also find. So that's why it's really critical today.
If you're going to use social media, building something called a personal brand is really important. And Hannah, what is this exactly and what are some key components of the personal brand?
Right. So when we think of a brand in general, every company is out there has some sort of a brand. It's what people say about that company when nobody's really listening or when they're just talking offline. Every individual has a reputation or a brand that people talk about when they're not in the room. It is what you're known for in the workplace. And so what's been happening over the years, as Kevin mentioned, is that now the job seeker has an opportunity to reach beyond just those people that know them in the workplace and spread that reputation beyond the people that they personally know in the workplace. And they can do that by developing a LinkedIn profile that does a good job of showcasing and highlighting what they're really good at in the workplace. Wonderful thing about LinkedIn is it allows an individual to have testimonials written by other people, their colleagues, right there within the LinkedIn profile. So people can actually see what other people write about you or what other people are saying. So it gives everybody the opportunity to be more transparent and more broader reach of what they're really good at doing. Because most often, I find people are very humble in their ability to talk about what they're good at doing.
So you should, when you're profiling your strength, should you brag a little bit? Or is that a turnoff to employers, Hannah?
How do you define bragging? I think that that's a difficult thing. I think the truth of the matter is never exaggerate the truth. But if you are taking credit where credit is due by stating facts, this is what I did, and this is what happened because of that. This is my action. This is my result. And there aren't a lot of flowery adjectives in there. It's hard numbers and measurable, quantifiable results. You can't say that that's bragging. It's just stating facts.
Kevin Grubb.
It's oftentimes difficult for people to do, right? But that's the challenge.
Yeah, there's this concept that people have termed or coined called the humble brag. So having a sense of humility of talking about yourself, and Hannah, I think, nailed it right there with saying having hard facts and evidence to back up, this is what I've done and here's the result of that action is great. Saying that you're honored to be a guest somewhere, saying that you're excited about this new thing that just launched and sharing that information, that's going to express a sense of emotion and feeling it and tying you personally to it that hopefully makes it feel a little less like bragging to the audience. You know, with social media, what's interesting in this notion of personal brand and bragging, you're open to perception. So it's important to have a little bit of a feedback loop and see how are people responding to this. Are people liking this? Are they also sharing it? Are they not? So you have that way to get a reaction.
So where do you go to get a feedback loop? Describe that.
Well, by looking at the post that you've posted and seeing if you get reactions or responses to that, whether it be a like, a comment, a retweet, a favorite. You can take that sort of pulse of how people are reacting to it. If you're getting a lot of dead air from folks, then that may be a sign. You know, no one's really reacting or responding to that. Now, the other part of that is it might not show up in someone's newsfeed, depending on how many other connections they have. But generally speaking, if you're getting a response or reaction to things, then it's probably that you're doing pretty well with talking about yourself.
So, and as you're trying to polish up that self image, Hannah Morgan, what are some flowery adjectives to stay away from?
The ones that really don't mean anything, some of the flowery ones would be excellent communication skills or superior at developing interpersonal relationships. And the ones that are fluffy, and honestly, I can't think of the many adjectives that are valuable. It's really the cold hard facts that work.
Is it good to use a little well-placed humor when building your brand? And I'm sure there are lines you could cross there too. Hannah Morgan?
If you are known in the workplace as being somebody with a wit, a wonderful sense of wit or sense of humor, I think it would be appropriate. Again, it depends on the industry that you're in. Very conservative industry is probably not as receptive to that. But again, everybody is known for something. And I would love to be able to get a sense of somebody's personality if they do have that wonderful sense of humor in the things that they write about and then the content that they share online. And in their profiles, it would be great to see that. That's truly a distinguishing characteristic about the person. Some people just aren't funny, and they probably shouldn't try to be funny if that's not their thing.
Kevin Grubb, you're nodding your head.
Yes. I think adding a little bit of personal color or flair can be really valuable. Social media is very different from a resume. It's this sense of the whole person and the whole self can be involved in this. So adding a sense of who you are is something that could be advantageous. I think Hannah nailed it also by saying, if you're not typically the funny person, the first to go to humor, then don't try it out necessarily with a big audience to follow on the first go. But I do think there's this sense that it's important to find a fit. And employers are looking for candidates that are a fit, not only for the positions, but also for the culture of their workplace. And I think candidates are placing value on that also, and should be placing value on that, because it certainly matters not only what you're doing, but who you do it with. And so social media gives you the ability to not only share that, but also see if other people share that with you.
So if you're starting far and away, you should target LinkedIn first, because there's a huge number of recruiters online looking at LinkedIn. Kevin?
Yes. I think for most industries, LinkedIn is the hallmark and the benchmark place to begin. Certainly for folks who may be in the artistic community or maybe musicians, potentially LinkedIn might not be the place I'd suggest that you start. So it's definitely industry specific, but LinkedIn is a great backbone in that it essentially works like having a resume that would be online. And LinkedIn has the opportunity for you to add things like rich media, links to websites, PowerPoint presentations, even audio files or videos if you wanted to display those. So
rich media.
Rich media, meaning PowerPoint presentations, links to websites, YouTube videos, clips of yourself. So all those things you can add to really not only show but tell. Not tell but show the things that you've done. So I think LinkedIn is a great backbone to start and definitely seems to be the preferred place for recruiters to go online and look for candidates.
And Hannah Morgan, is LinkedIn a fairly easy site to navigate?
I think that it is. Most people are more familiar with Facebook, but what you will find is there's once you speak one social media language, picking up the others become the other languages of social media platforms like LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever. It becomes almost intuitive. A lot of the features and functionality sort of are similar across the different platforms. So anybody who's got any kind of familiarity with social media will have no problem really understanding and seeing what LinkedIn is all about. But even if somebody doesn't have any social media skills, learning how to use LinkedIn will be a wonderful skill for them to acquire, because more and more those social media tools are becoming used in the workplace to gather intelligence, to monitor the company's reputation, to stay in touch with what's going on in the industry. So now is a good time to learn LinkedIn and invest the time to learn how to use it smartly.
Kevin, we were talking off mic before the show started about there's kind of this generational divide, which the young are really social media savvy and perhaps an older generation, not so much so, but they each bring different skills to the table in terms of job hunting. Could you address that for us?
Yeah, sure. So I think what's interesting is when I speak to folks of the younger generation, they know how to use the tools very well. They're very savvy on social media and get it, so to speak. But need some of the coaching around what's appropriate to do, the right words to use, the finesse to use in contacting someone, or even just knowing that it's professionally acceptable to reach out to people and ask them for conversations such as an informational interview. So I think that is a whole new concept for them they've never done before. So there's just hesitancy around how do I do this?
Eventually you have to meet face-to-face.
Right. There definitely is. My piece of advice is that social media is often the means to the end, not the end itself. So this may be the way you open the door or get the introduction or learn about someone. But the best thing to do is, of course, meet the person in person if you can get there. Decisions about hiring are most often made in person. So you want to get to that level of conversation. And then the older generations are much more likely to be savvy in the finesse of the professional conversations, communicating things about their value, knowing about the industry that they're in, but maybe a little more hesitant around how do I use these specific tools now. So there's different levels of education and different types of education you want to provide based on the generation that you're working with.
Hannah Morgan, as we're talking about social media, face-to-face networking is still important, is it not?
It is absolutely important. Kevin really hit the nail on the head when he said the younger generation understands how to use the tool, but what they don't understand is that social interaction. And using social media to begin the relationship is just part one, again, as Kevin said. Taking that relationship in real life, IRL, to speak their language, is really the most important part. And I can't tell you how many people I have been able to meet because I first met them on social media, which led to a phone call, which led to an in-person meeting. I'm an introvert, so I don't necessarily put myself out there too much, and I find it difficult to network with people I don't know. But what I think social media does for anybody is really gives that comfort and it allows you to build trust and a sense of feeling like you know the person prior to actually having a first phone call where the stakes are higher and you really want to make sure that you build that great relationship getting from the start.
Okay, we are talking about using social media as a way to find employment. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter are all options. What is the best way to use them, and how do we best polish our online presence? We're talking to Hannah Morgan, job search, career, and social media strategist and founder of CareerSherpa.net, and Kevin Grubb, associate director of digital media and assessment at Villanova University's Career Center. And if you've got questions or comments, give us a call. 888-477-9499 is the number. Our email address is radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. There's more of Radio Times coming right up. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. Our focus this hour is on social media and how building a personal brand and using various sites like LinkedIn and Facebook can help a job seeker win good employment. We are joined by Kevin Grubb, Associate Director of Digital Media and Assessment at Villanova University's Career Center, and he also teaches an online course focusing on social media and creating a professional identity online. And also, Hannah Morgan is founder of CareerSherpa.net and author of the Infographic Resume. And lines are open, 888-477-9499. If you've got questions, it's a great time to call. Our email address is radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So let's tackle Facebook, which recently counted 1 billion users in a single day. Kevin, how do you need to design your Facebook site so you can use it for job hunting?
So the important thing is to really, I think, start by building a great profile on Facebook. That's the standard advice you'd start with for any social media site. But what I think folks might skip over on Facebook, not thinking it's a professional resource, is there are sections in your profile where you can fill in your work experience, your education, even your skills, so that you can actually be searched on and found for those things within the Facebook site and system. So I think it's important to really take time and build those parts of your profile. And then, like any social media site, the next piece of advice really is to get active. These are all contact sports. You have to add value to be seen as valuable and to be seen as someone who's worthy of a hire. So it's important to then start posting things about your professional goals and what you're doing and what you're up to so that people know what they could contact you for.
And Hannah, what should not go on the wall? I guess the rule of thumb is if your grandmother can't see it, it probably isn't going to help you get a job.
Right. Yeah, we want to keep it G for general audience, suitable for general audiences. But I don't think that means it has to be completely void of some of the things that people are active in. We know that there are a lot of younger people and some older people that are using Facebook really to communicate primarily with friends and family. But it's a missed opportunity, and I want to encourage them to step out of that sort of initial their view of how they're using Facebook to make it a little bit more professional. So if they primarily use it for friends and family, they could consider adding more of the interest they have on Facebook, sharing about a volunteer activity or a project that they're working on at work, or maybe even some highlight about what their company recently achieved. And I'm a huge fan of paying it forward. So if they know their company has an opportunity, they could go ahead and share that with their Facebook network. I think there are a lot of things that people can do that are positive. Just avoid the things that could get you in trouble, and know that whatever you post online is really public, and pay attention to how you categorize each status update. A lot of people don't realize that there's a difference between sharing something with the whole wide world and everybody on the internet versus just your friends and connections on Facebook. So know the difference between the globe and then sharing things with people that you are connected with on Facebook.
And are privacy settings what they've cracked up to be, Kevin? Go ahead, Hannah.
There is a privacy setting, but there's also each individual status update you can categorize as to whom you want to see it. Do you want it to be public? Do you want to share it with your friends? Or do you want to share it with just a certain person? And most people don't really pay attention to that, but they should be aware of what the status is of that particular update.
Kevin,
what would you ask?
Oh, I was just going to say basically the same thing, that I think it's a missed opportunity to not explore those privacy settings really carefully and to consider that even if you share something and you share it privately, it might be reshared by someone else into some other context you might not know that's coming. So it's important to, you know, while privacy settings are valuable and helpful, it's not that they could be the end-all be-all of protecting you online. So it's important to think critically about what you're posting before you do.
Err on the side of caution. Well, let's get to this social recruiting survey by JobVite. And as we mentioned before, a lot of hiring managers, this survey says 93% of hiring managers will look at a candidate's social media profile. So some absolute don'ts: do not make references to illegal drugs.
Certainly, yes.
It's an immediate turnoff, no matter what you might do in your private life with your friends, and it might seem to be okay.
It's not going to serve
you
very well.
Not condoning it here, but it's not going to help, you know, it's not going to help in the job. Hannah, no sexual posts. I guess some of these things should be obvious, but to some people they're not.
Well, I think you – go ahead, Hannah.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you might be – folks may be have an illusion of the privacy given the privacy settings and thinking that this is only going to be shared with certain people, or thinking, you know, I'm not an important celebrity or public figure, so who's going to see these things about me, and what is it going to matter when I do share something like that? But the truth is, there are a lot of people using these sites, and it is the internet, so it's important to be mindful of the information that you post.
Okay, and profanity is a no-no, correct, Hannah?
Big no-no. It's offensive, and so is poor communication skills, using bad grammar, any of that stuff. Where, you know, if we're just communicating with somebody via a text message, it's okay. It might be okay as long as it's a friend. we want to make sure that whatever is posted out there is readable, that is suitable for all audiences, and it wouldn't offend anybody. So anything related to race, religion, gender is probably to be avoided as well. Those are dangerous areas to tread.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that beyond those things which do seem obvious is to think about posts that really reflect your character. So saying something like, I hate my boss, or called out of work today, or skipped class, you know, those things, after a long time of saying those things, those add up, and some of them are automatic killers of your reputation. So it's really important to even go beyond the obvious and think that, you know, I hear from a lot of people who say, oh, I use that site to vent. And it's important to be really thoughtful about even that, because some of those things can really show a sign of character beyond the obvious don'ts.
And even if something as simple as spelling mistakes. I mean, you might get that autocorrect on your smartphone, but not necessarily on a social media site.
Right. And if it, and sometimes autocorrect can work not in your favor. There are very famous websites that show you that. So you certainly want to be mindful of that, because those repeated errors, you know, made to someone raise question about your attention to detail, which is going to be important in almost any job that you take these days. So it's important to really think, you know, take a beat before you hit post on most of the things that you're going to say.
Okay, before we get to the calls, and they're stacking up here, just a few more no-nos. Over half of hiring managers surveyed by JobVite did not like posts on guns. Many did not like posts about alcohol, and political affiliations were also viewed with distaste by some managers. So there you have it. Okay, let's welcome Rachel to Radio Time. She's in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, how are all of you?
We're well.
Doing great.
Thank you. What's your question?
So it's really a comment. I advise a lot of my clients, because I'm a freelance media relations person, and we talk about social media. And I think one of my big pieces of advice could really be helpful for job seekers as well. And that's to remember that what Facebook and other social media sites give you is access to people outside of your social realm. So if you're only posting on your own feed, you're only reaching people you already know. But there are all of these organizations, trade groups, affiliations throughout social media sites that you can access and comment on and become a known quantity on. And that's going to give these people access to potential employers that they might not have in the past been able to reach.
Rachel, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Hannah Morgan, I'm guessing that you're going to say, oh, yes, I agree with that. Throw the net out.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing and what we know is that more and more companies are starting to build what they call talent communities, which could be a Facebook group. It could be a group on LinkedIn to try and lure and build applicants for a better pipeline so that they can build relationships with potential candidates before they have a job available. These would be candidates that are already interested in the company, which shows that level of enthusiasm towards the organization. Great advice by Rachel.
Let's go to Hamilton Township, New Jersey. And Asma, hello, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, hello, hi.
Hi.
I'm so excited that we're talking about LinkedIn today. I've been a LinkedIn fan for about 10 years, and I just started doing my own workshop. So a lot of people I find, whether they're young, in their mid-30s, or in their like mid-50s, a lot of people don't seem to have profiles. So one of my questions to you guys is, for your profile, what is the first thing that you want to set up on LinkedIn for your profile?
Okay.
And number two is, would you recommend that everybody have photos on LinkedIn? Because I know it's changed a lot, because a lot more people have photos like that I see. And now if I get requests from people, I'm like, wait a second, they don't have their photo. Should I, you know? So I'm not quite sure if that's the kind of way we're swinging in LinkedIn. So I just kind of want to get some advice.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And let's tackle number two first, a photo.
Yeah. According to LinkedIn's research, profiles with photos are 11 times more likely to be viewed by other users on LinkedIn. And I think really the nature of this is that it's a social network. It's people looking at people. So there's this element of your face that's different from maybe a resume that wouldn't customarily have that. And in the United States, we wouldn't wouldn't advise necessarily to put your photo on a resume.
Do you recommend spending the money to get a professional to do it?
I don't think you necessarily have to. Your smartphone typically has an incredibly high quality camera on it. So as long as you're within the context of your profession, so if you're, let's say, trying to work in a lab in research, maybe you want to take a picture of you in a lab doing research. You could also do a straight on headshot of just you standing there in professional dress. Something that matches your industry is important. So you don't have to spend the money and get a professional looking shot necessarily to get you started. There are lots of services and folks out there who sometimes do offer headshots, knowing that those are important. So if you have the opportunity to get that going, it might not be a bad idea, but not a requirement. I would certainly not wait to post a photo because you're waiting to pay to have it be done. Get something up.
And Hannah Morgan, how casual can the photos be?
The photo should really be a reflection of the industry that you're interested in. So if you're in a creative field, then you possibly could have a headshot that's a little bit more creative. I will say one of the trends that we'll notice on LinkedIn is that the headshots tend to be closer and more just chin to forehead kind of shots than they are full body shots. So one of the ways around worrying about how creative it should be or how informal or informal or formal it should be is if you're really just focusing on a nice headshot, which is really from your neck up to the top of your head, it doesn't matter what you're wearing down below. The other reason is that the photo box is so small that if you do put a full picture of your full torso or your whole body, it's hard to get an idea of what's going on there. But I've seen some people who are into forestry who have a picture of themselves in front of a great sign outside with a bunch of greenery and mountains and hills in the background. So it really depends on what your occupation is, on what your how formal or informal your picture should be.
And Kevin Grubb, Ozma had asked about the number one thing to do to get started on LinkedIn.
Start with the top box of your profile, which contains the place for you to put your photo, the headline, which are the words that appear directly under your name, and then some of the basic fast facts about you, which usually are populated from things like the experience section of your profile. So anything that works to create and fill out that top box of your profile is the number one thing to do. It's the first thing people will see, and if they're not interested beyond that box, then they're not going to scroll down and look at the rest. So that's the first thing to tackle, is everything up there.
Okay, we've got a comment from Warren. I'm sensing he's not a real fan of LinkedIn here. He says, since LinkedIn has become essentially a data mining site, I recommend staying away from it. As a business owner, it allows competitors to know about my employees, making it easier to steal them or point out to customers that your people do not have the skills to do the job and other bad practices. Hannah Morgan, what do you think of that?
Oh, that's an interesting take. I'm a huge fan of always being on the lookout for my next opportunity because life really is about having options. So if you don't have a profile on LinkedIn as an individual, you've just eliminated a lot of options because over 90% of recruiters are there and they're mining it. So go ahead, don't put a profile on LinkedIn and see what doesn't happen in your career.
Okay. Let's get to an email from Jeff. And Kevin, if you could address this. He says, I think using social media for job hunting is ridiculous. The headhunters are young and don't understand or appreciate the accomplishments of more than 5 years ago, which was during an economic downturn. If you are over 50, you are invisible.
I think the key about what social media could do for someone in that situation is, again, the reaching out to specific people to start building that network of folks who you might not know right away, but you know are within reach of knowing. What a site like, let's say, a LinkedIn does is it shows you the degrees of separation from you to someone else. So, Mary, if you and I are connected and you have a friend who works in an industry that I might want to be in and I know you well enough, I could reach out to you and say, Mary, you know, could you introduce me to Steve, who works in construction? I really am interested in learning more about the field, and I'd love to start to have conversations with folks who do that. So I think that's one of the ways that social media could help you is to start to really let those people out there know you and you get to know those people so it can help you focus your job search a little bit more.
It's probably not a bad idea to Google yourself and see what comes up. Is that correct, Hannah?
Right. Defensive Googling. We want to know what an employer would see if they search for us online. They're going to do it at some point during the application process. And so the best way to understand what they're going to see is to do it yourself. So go ahead, enter your name into Google or whatever your search engine of choice is, and see what shows up on that first page. you only want somebody to see the good things. And usually that will be the very strong, high-ranking profile, LinkedIn profile, maybe Facebook, maybe Twitter if you're there, and high-ranking sites from schools or government organizations or things like that. So, yeah, the individual definitely wants to do some defense there, and if they're not ranking well on the first page, they need to take some steps to work on fixing that.
One good thing to do is to learn how to communicate, to blog, to talk about your profession. That gets you out there too as well, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of great sites that are cheap or for free for you to build a blog or a presence for yourself even outside of social media. So sites like WordPress help you very easily create and have great free templates for you to create a website that can help you rank higher in search results for yourself and put out good content. So,
does your blog have to be perfect?
It doesn't have to be perfect to start. I think that's the caution that I think a lot of people approach me with, is feeling like it has to be flawless every time. I have to pay $200 and get this professional headshot for my LinkedIn profile, and I have to have it be absolutely to the T perfect every single time. And certainly I don't want you to have typos or egregious errors or things that aren't representing you well, but the best thing to do is really just get your toe in the water and start, and then let things refine and build from there. One of the things that social media helps you do is tell your story, and that's becoming really critical in a job search, is learning how to craft and tell your story beyond the resume and beyond a cover letter. So you want to just start telling that story and seeing how the reactions come in from it, the retweets, the shares, the comments, all those things, and then be crafting and honing that and meeting new people, letting them influence your story and build it over time.
And Hannah, this is where hashtags and keywords can come into play. In about 45 seconds, let's discuss what those are and why you need to learn how to use them.
A hashtag is that number sign, the old-fashioned pound on the phone, and it represents it's almost like a tag in a status update or in an electronic file. It says to somebody, it allows people to search for a particular keyword or index or something. So, for example, if I were looking for a job as an engineer, an electronics engineer, then somebody would, the job that I would put in as a job poster is job #job #electronic #engineer. So people are using those on Twitter when they're promoting jobs, but job seekers can also use those hashtags to search for jobs and to promote themselves in those different job categories.
Okay, we're going to get to more of that in just a moment. We're up against a break, but we'll stay with that. We'll address that after the break. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in from Marty Moskowane. More on using social media as a way to find employment just ahead. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowane. And we are joined by Kevin Grubb, Associate Director of Digital Media and Assessment at Villanova University's Career Center. Also, Hannah Morgan is founder of CareerSherpa.net and author of the Infographic Resume. And Hannah, going into the break, we were talking about hashtags, defining them. Keywords are also really important because potential employers use keywords to find you. Could you get into that for us?
Yeah, so that's great. Thanks for coming back to that, because keywords are those usually the tangible skills that an employer would be looking for. It could be a job title. It could be something that's very specific. And so companies and recruiters are going into LinkedIn looking for those keywords. They're going into Google and searching for people with certain specific skills. If they're looking for a Ruby on Rails developer, they're going to be looking for a very specific set of technical skills to recruit those types of people who are typically hard to find and currently employed. So we want to make sure that our profiles, and when we are writing our LinkedIn profile, that we do a good job to understand and communicate the right keywords for the industry that we are focusing on moving into next.
Okay, let's get to some more calls and emails and comments. Judy emails, what is the best way to use social media if you don't want your current employer to know you are looking for another job? Kevin Grubb?
Great question. What I think you want to do is maintain your privacy settings very carefully there. On a site like a LinkedIn, you might want to do more discreet connections or conversations with people. So rather than posting a status update asking for potential referrals or sources of help or, you know, the next job, job, you might want to contact individual people in private messages. You may want to go into LinkedIn groups and then privately message people within those groups who've posted that they have a job opportunity at their company and they're looking for people to contact them. So you may want to actually take the people that are out there and start doing the private messaging to just those individuals as opposed to broadcasting it much more widely. So it depends on how public or private your search is, but there are options for you to make things more public or private on the sites.
And private messaging is relatively secure.
Yes, it's relatively secure. You know, certainly when you send that message to someone, it could be sent out by that person to something else. But you have that level of understanding that this message is just going to this one other person. That's my only intent for that. So that's what I'd be focusing on then, is much more private levels of messaging. Still with a great public-facing profile and brand that describes who you are and what you're capable of, but maybe not putting it so forthcoming out there. I'm looking for my next opportunity.
Pamela has emailed us. She says, even if you use Facebook to communicate with friends and family and not to look for a job, one of those friends or relatives could end up hiring you. It happened to me, she says. So be careful what you say. She also goes on to say something on a more serious note, though. It's great that the stigma against mental illness, for instance, is diminishing these days, but potential employers might be turned off if they know you struggle with depression or anxiety, let alone bipolar, ADHD, etc. It's probably also not a great idea to refer to chronic physical illnesses either, except in a kind of code that your closer friends will get and that other people won't. Hannah, what do you think?
That's really great. That's a great point. While we would hope that employers would not discriminate against any candidate for any of those reasons, we know that not everybody's created equal, and that could potentially happen. So the best strategy and the best strategy is to keep that kind of information off your social media profile and off the feed altogether. And it's sort of we talked about eliminating a lot of the conversation about negative talk about your employer or your job or religion or politics. Unfortunately, your physical status and mental health is also one of those things where you want to keep it low profile. You don't want anybody to use that against you if they have the opportunity to.
We touched on Twitter just a bit, but how do you best use Twitter to look for work, Kevin?
What I would say to start is create a Twitter account and think about it as if it's a personal learning network for yourself. So I think a lot of people are intimidated by Twitter. There's a very specific set of language and way to use Twitter that is not quite the same on other social networks. So there's lots of code language. RT means our tweet or a retweet. There's ways to message people that are different using the @ sign. So it might seem foreign to folks on how to actually communicate. So start by creating a personal learning network for yourself and follow folks in your industry or field who are going to teach you things and show you things about that industry. And to build maybe lists on Twitter. I think that's one of the most underutilized resources there, is to build lists of folks that you follow that actually categorize users you're following into those lists, so you can monitor conversations around specific industries, fields, topics that you're following based on what those people are saying on it. And then to, just like the other networks, start contributing, start adding value, using those hashtags to engage in conversation with other people who are using those hashtags in conversation, so you're getting to know them better. What's different about Twitter is there's no place to build a full profile, so your tweets really become your profile. Your tweets become you. So it's important to really think critically about those tweets you're sending out, because those will essentially build that reputation of who you are.
If you do find employment, how active should you remain on social media?
I would advocate that being active on social media all the time is great, because what it can do is build your reputation for yourself and in turn build the reputation of your organization. Because if you're a star and you're working at a company, then that company can also rise with your star and vice versa. So it's critical, I think, to stay active and stay engaged. I know lots of folks and friends of mine and myself who meet on social media. Hannah mentioned she's met some folks on social media, which enhance your professional self and your identity. So you can really learn a lot. As I mentioned, Twitter is an example of build a great personal learning network on there. So by staying engaged, you still get some of that benefit of knowledge that will help you in your current role, even if you land it.
Hannah, I'd read that it's probably best to set up a separate account on Twitter for job hunting, have two separate personal and professional.
I think it depends on the individual. I personally only have one account. I would find it very difficult to manage two. One of the things that I think people are looking for, and one of the things Twitter really is a little bit maybe more forgiving, is that it is a blend of different types of status updates and things that you're sharing. So if you are, you're going to use it for your personal and professional, just know that there needs to be a very purposeful blend of the kinds of information that you're putting out there on Twitter. So if you're going to be putting information about your personal life, that would be one quarter of the information you're sharing. The other quarter of the status updates that you provide would be work-related, professionally to your industry, sharing news from other organizations. Another quarter is giving shout-outs and sharing other people's work and giving them praise and recognition for what they're doing, perhaps industry expertise. And the final one quarter is just good news, happy news, positive reinforcement of good things going on out there. So I think it's okay to use just one Twitter account as long as you are being methodical and strategic in how you update it.
All right. Back to the phones. Jamie in Reading, Pennsylvania. You're live on Radio Times. Hi, Jamie.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It seems clear that networking is really vitally important when looking for a job locally. But for those that might want to relocate to another region of the country where they might not have much of an existing network, does social media play a role in attempting to create such a network, and in what capacity? Because it seems that many hiring managers may be reluctant to begin the interview process with out-of-state applicants, and can social media help mitigate this issue?
Oh, good question, Jamie. Thanks. Are they reluctant if you're out of state? Maybe you're a little less appealing, Kevin?
I think it can depend on the position and how much they're really in need of that position. But I think there's certainly a potential reluctancy, because isn't it nice to have someone who's in your backyard and you can easily recruit, may not have to worry about the relocation situation going on there. So it in some cases, maybe it is more advantageous to be local, and employers might be looking for that. But I think social media can help mitigate that. Again, I think really it's you got to build that network before you need it. So what social media can help you do is find the people who live in that region, who may be active in that particular space, to help build those connections so you can become a known entity before you even live there. But I think there's definitely an advantage to being in the physical location, because you get the chance to, as I said, meet those people. So using social media as the means to the end, not the end itself. So the living in the area is very helpful, can be very helpful, but the social media part of it, you know, really can help you start to get to know those folks and have them get to know you.
Okay. Hannah, is it still important to put together a good old-fashioned resume?
Absolutely. Everybody still needs a good old-fashioned resume. It's a very important part of the job application process for a lot of companies still. It is usually like the first port of entry is submitting that online resume to their applicant tracking system. So, yes, it needs to be smart. It needs to be a well-crafted document for that very specific job. And no longer can we have one resume that's generic to fit all kinds of different jobs. It needs to be very customized. And, you know, a Word doc is what we're using.
And I have also heard it's a good idea to learn how to use Dropbox or Google Drive. Hannah?
Well, a lot of people are using that so that they can have access to their resume on the fly. They might be, you know, in a meeting somewhere and someone asks to see their resume. So, sure, having a Dropbox or a similar kind of ability to access a document that's in the cloud means that you can always have access to it. And it's smart to be able to access things on the go. Absolutely.
Okay, let's get to this email from Bruce. He says, do you realize that some of the tips you're presenting, for example, placing a picture of yourself on sites, are in conflict with security measures security IT professionals say not to do? Well, a lot of people put pictures on sites. So, Kevin, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think there's certainly the juxtaposition of not putting pictures on sites to not be identified, and there are potential threats to that. I think with social media, there's still the idea of getting to know the individual, and it's a personal network where you're meeting other folks, and this level of getting in touch with someone personally. So I think having one picture up there, it helps you be known and have that face and name recognition. But certainly it's important not to post a lot. I think a lot of photos, certainly the photos we talked about that might put you in hot water might not be good. And having a level of privacy and protection around the photos is going to be critical. So thinking about that is important, and being mindful of what you post up there is important.
Okay. Rebecca tweets a Facebook no-no. She says, a former nanny took to Facebook to rant about our kids, and we were Facebook friends. #Oops. Hannah, yeah. Don't burn your bridges, right?
Right. You don't burn your bridges. Right. Crazy. People don't realize what that could possibly mean down the road. Very short-sighted.
Okay. Another rather old-fashioned idea, but still germane. I hear that it's a good idea, Kevin, to get a business card made up. Mm. So what should you include in 2015 on a business card?
Yeah, I still think those things are valuable. Those little in-person touches and the easy ways to communicate with someone matter. And certainly different generations are in the workplace and still use things like business cards. So you want to be able to flexibly communicate with everyone and do it well. Things that I think should go on a business card are the old-fashioned things. Your name, a tagline about yourself in some kind of way, an email address that could be easily reached for you and you check often. But then adding things like your Twitter handle, your LinkedIn public profile URL that would be easily accessed by someone if you wanted to share those things. So any place online on social media where you have a professional presence and want that to be shared, make sure to include that on your business card as well.
And now to refresh the idea, there are apps that allow you to use your phone to share your card.
Yes,
if you don't
absolutely.
Have, if you don't happen to have it in your pocket.
Absolutely. So there's easy ways that technology can help you share those things. I've even seen people put things like a QR code on a business card or even on a resume that may be linked to a personal profile or a portfolio of work that you've done, maybe a personal website. So even those things that can help enhance and further the connection if someone wants to learn more could be valuable.
Hannah Morgan, let's get to rejection. It is part of the game. What is your advice for handling a no thank you?
Yeah, no thank you just means no, not at this time. I think that there are so many things that a company is looking at when they're trying to fill a job, and a job seeker should not necessarily take that as a personal rejection. It means that they're not a fit for that particular job at that particular time. So one of the things that I would highly recommend somebody does who's received a rejection is to respond with a thank you. Thank you so much for letting me know. I'm sorry I wasn't a candidate for this job. Please do keep me in mind for future opportunities. And then that job seeker can also stay in contact with that recruiter or hiring manager on a, you know, every 3 months or so just to check in, share some information about what's going on in the industry so they stay top of mind.
Hannah, you also say it's not just about the job hunt. Quote, smart job seekers focus on the needs, wants, and desires of others and obsess less over their need to find a job. The latter part can be hard to do.
Absolutely, because being in the market for a job can be very stressful for a variety of reasons, and we do tend to take it personally. But if we're always keeping in mind that this is, quote-unquote, a business transaction, and in any business transaction, we need to appreciate and understand where the buyer is coming from so that we can meet their requirements, meet their needs. And it's when we try and keep that sort of impersonal outlook, I think we'll all be a lot better. Many times job seekers want to know the reason they were rejected. And it's been my experience with the candidates I've worked with have never been able to really find out the real reason they didn't get the job. It becomes a very risky proposition for an HR professional to be able to provide that feedback. So I don't necessarily recommend somebody spend a lot of time and effort trying to find out why they didn't get the job. Just move forward.
Okay. We've got a tweet from Teresa. We can squeeze one more in here before the end of the show. LinkedIn does not sync updates between smartphone and laptop. I get complete your profile notices when I already have. Also, why does LinkedIn allow anonymous profile views? Kevin, want to tackle that for us?
Yeah, so I think LinkedIn is really working hard to continue to develop their app ecosystem. They have several apps that work on smartphones and tablets. I personally still prefer the laptop, and that shocks many people, I think, because I am one of those millennials who loves my technology, but I still like it on the desktop, and I can really take all the action I need to take in one place. So if you're concerned about things, I would always say check it on the desktop and work on that space. And then what was her second part of the question? It was about something else about LinkedIn.
Yeah, actually, it's gone.
Anonymous update.
Oh, anonymous update.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Hannah.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Got about 10 seconds.
Everybody has the ability to do that, to be anonymous or not. So I think it's one of those things that you want to keep your job search private. It might be good to do.
All right, Kevin Grubb, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin is Associate Director of Digital Media and Assessment at Villanova University's Career Center. And Hannah Morgan, a pleasure. Thank you, Hannah.
Thanks, Mary. Nice meeting you.
You too. Hannah's a job search, career, and social media strategist and founder of CareerSherpa.net. And as always, remember to visit our Facebook page and podcasts at whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Kevin Griffin. Our producers are Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. And our intern is Diana Allen. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain on Radio Times. Thank you so much for joining us.